Good morning to you all. We truly are blessed to be here this morning. And as we have just sung with what joyful praise we give to our God, I do want to call you higher this morning. I want to challenge our thinking a little bit. I want you to put your thinking caps on today as we look at a passage. We hear the word joy a lot, especially this season. Christmas songs talk about happiness and joy. Christmas cards wish us the joy of the season. Many people feel more stressed at this time of year than joyful. There's the pressures of finding the perfect gift and probably paying more for something than I really have. Or there's the navigating the quirks and the problems when all of the extended family comes over at some point during the holidays. Someone once said it is finding joy in the of Christmas. But what I want us to see this morning is that joy is not something that we find. Joy is something that is given to us. And I want us to look at John chapter 15 this morning. Turn your Bibles to John chapter 15. And to sort of set this up, we first have to sort of talk about our capacity for joy. We might ask that question, well, what is your joy capacity? Now, capacity is just the idea or it is the maximum amount that something can contain. So, this little Dixie cup has a maximum amount that it can contain. If I pour water into it, it's only going to hold so much. And if I keep on pouring, it's going to come out over the side. So we say there's a certain capacity that this cup has. Certain people have certain capacities. Some people have capacity for pain, in that they can handle a lot of pain. AR and I were talking about this just in a certain situation this week. We were like, you know what? Women have a whole lot of capacity for pain. Because ladies, you can go through childbirth. Now, I don't know that that is something that men could go through. Or if we did, we'd be crying all the way. So there's a capacity that certain people have, a greater capacity to handle pain. There is also some who have a greater capacity, I would say, for sorrow or joy. You know, there are those people who it just seems like it's always they find what's wrong in life. That the bright spots are usually turned to gray in their life. When Jeff was doing the class on joy, he used the idea of Eeyore. Remember in Winnie the Pooh, and Eeyore's just, oh yes, it's another day. You know, that idea that they don't seem to have a great capacity for joy compared to other people who they come into the room and, you know, there's a brightness that comes from them. It seems that they have a greater capacity for joy. And maybe we find ourselves wishing for more joy in our lives. Well, we need to go further and we need to sort of define joy. What is it? Well, I would say that there are the enjoyments of life can be categorized into three different categories. I would say pleasure, happiness, and joy. And Gary Henry describes this way better than I can. He says, in talking about these three, he says, pleasure is just what the word suggests. that which is pleasant, especially to the senses. So we would say this is the very basis of enjoyments. Whatever our senses, you know, hold on to, that's pleasure to us. What seems happy to, or what seems pleasurable to us. Happiness is the state of well-being that comes when what is happening to us is just what we would prefer to happen. So happiness is based off of circumstances. What is occurring to me or what is happening in my life, if it is something that I prefer, then I find happiness. Joy, on the other hand, is a far greater thing. It is that poignant thrill that comes from the foretaste of eternal, otherworldly raptures, even when earthly pleasures and happiness are absent. And I think a lot of times what happens in our lives is that we strive for joy, but we're okay with happiness. But the reality is, sometimes we just settle for pleasures. But the Bible shows us a completely different picture. It tells us that joy is not just a possibility, it is a reality. It shows us that joy is not something that we find, but it is something that we are given in abundance. You see, Jesus gives joy. The greatest thing which Jesus gives to us is His joy. I want us to look at that in John chapter 15. So in John chapter 15, beginning there in verse 1, He starts talking with His disciples. And this is Jesus talking with His disciples in the last hours before He is going to the trial, before He's betrayed, before He goes to the cross. And so He's imparting these last things that He wants disciples to know. And He starts talking in John 15 about, I am the true vine, you are the branches. So He's giving a metaphor of this plant. And He starts talking about what that means and how they are to bear fruit. But I want to pick up the reading there in verse 9. And He says, just as My Father has loved Me, I have also loved you. Abide in My love. If you keep My commandments, you will abide in My love, just as I have kept My Father's commandments and abide in His love. These things I have spoken to you so that My joy may be in you and that your joy may be made full. This is My commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than that one lay down his life for his friends. Notice specifically here verse 11, where He says, these things I have spoken to you so that My joy may be in you and that your joy may be made full. Notice, He doesn't say that we have to go make our own joy or that we have to go find our own joy. He is telling them here, He says, that I want My joy to be in you. That His delight is to be our joy. Or we could say it another way, that He is to be the object of our joy. But I want you to notice something more profound than that in what He says here in this passage. Because what He says is that He increases our capacity for joy. Do you see that? Because He says, so that My joy may be in you and that your joy may be made full. Well, in chapter 17, just a few chapters over, still the same time frame, He is praying a prayer. And in verse 17 or 13 of chapter 17, He is praying to the Father, and He says, but now I come to you, that is to the Father, and these things I speak in the world so that they may have my joy made full in themselves. Now, we all have a capacity for joy, but it's limited because we're finite people. Just like this cup here, we have a certain amount of capacity for joy. But what Jesus is saying here is he's saying not that he just comes to increase our capacity to its final limits and then leave us short of his joy. It's infinite. What he's saying here is that he pours his capacity for joy so that we are now capable of infinite joy. Now follow what he's saying here. He's not just saying, okay, here's your capacity, let me give you a little bit better. He's not just saying, okay, let me make it a little bit bigger, now you've got a greater capacity for joy. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, let me expand your capacity, if you will, to hold all of the water that is on the earth. He's saying, let me expand to be infinitely able to experience joy. Jesus is saying, you now have my joy in you, and you enjoy what I enjoy with my joy. Or to say it a different way, we can enjoy him with the very joy of God. Now, might be able to sort of reason through that and say, okay, yeah, I've got that joy. But the question that comes up then is next is, well, what is his joy? What is that joy that Jesus has? And I would say that it is fellowship with the Father. Notice what he says there in verse 9 and 10. Just as the Father has loved me, I have also loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. He's saying, I'm in the Father's love. I'm abiding in it. I'm abiding in the fellowship that I have with the Father. Now let's look at a couple of passages that I think bear this out. In Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 30, wisdom is being applied here. And it says there, then I was beside him, that is God the Creator, as a master workman, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him. Now, I realize it is a personification of wisdom here, but let's ask the question, who was with the Father from before the beginning of time? Jesus. He was there with him. He was his delight. He was rejoicing with him. As one person said, the eternal Christ, God's happy and equal agent in creation, was ever rejoicing before God and ever God's delight. We can look at a passage in the New Testament in Acts chapter 2. Here, Peter is on the day of Pentecost. He's proclaiming the sermon. He's telling these people, these Jews, what they have done. And he is then going back and he's using a psalm that they would know, Psalm 16. But he's saying, I want you to understand that this psalm is talking about Jesus Christ. And so he goes on and says in verse 25, for David says concerning him, that is, concerning Jesus, I saw the Lord always before me, for he is at my right hand, that I may not be shaken. Therefore my heart was glad, and my tongue rejoiced. My flesh also will dwell in hope, for you will not abandon my soul to Hades, or let your Holy One see corruption. You have made known to me the paths of life. You will make me full of gladness with your presence. Peter is saying here that Jesus was finding that joy in the Father. If you go back and actually look at what Psalm 16 and verse 11 says, it says, in your presence is fullness of joy. And so what we're saying here is that the greatest joy of Jesus is seeing the Father's glory and being glorified with the Father. Because again, in chapter 17 and verse 5, just a few verses before, we saw that in verse 13. Jesus says, "Now and now, Father, glorify me in your own presence with the glory that I had with you before the world existed." Now, what was the Godhead doing eternity before the world existed? They were knowing each other. They were loving each other. They were delighting in each other. We talked about that idea before where it says that God is love. If God is love, that is His very nature. Well, He couldn't just be love. How are you love if you don't have someone to love? It wasn't that He became love when He created all of the universe. He is love before that. He was loving the Son and the Holy Spirit. They were talking, they were communicating, there was friendship in the deepest meaning of that word. They were fulfilling the needs of each other so that they continually experienced ultimate satisfaction. Think about that. That's what the Godhead was doing from all eternity and continues to do for all eternity moving forward. The glory and the fellowship of the Father is Jesus' greatest joy. We see that this joy goes beyond pain and difficult circumstances. Because let's face it, Jesus didn't go around all the time with a smile on his face. It describes him as a man of sorrow, acquainted with our grief. In Isaiah 53. And He goes to the cross and endures the worst pain and suffering that there ever could be. But we find in Hebrews chapter 12 and in verse 2 where it says, "Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God." What was that joy that made it possible for Him to endure the cross, to endure all of that suffering? It was that fellowship with the Father. And it was the joy of receiving worship from those He died to make joyful with God. See, God intends this joy to be our joy. He wants you to have what Jesus has. It's interesting in Isaiah 66 and verse 5. There it says, "Your brothers who hate you and cast you out for my name's sake have said, 'Let the Lord be glorified, that we may see your joy.'" In the context here, what we have are God's enemies mocking the servants of God. But what they even understand, that they are mocking them, they're saying, "Let the Lord be glorified, so that we may see your joy." There's the connection there between glory of God and our joy. That when we see that glory, that brings us joy. That to embrace the suffering, the risen, the reigning, the coming Christ is to have an experience the joy of God. And that fullness of joy will come after this life is over. You remember the parable that Jesus spoke about in Matthew chapter 25? He talks about His servant. He says, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And then at the end of it, He says, enter into the joy of your master? That's what he's talking about here. He says, we have this if we are in Christ. Well, we need to go further and say, how do we receive his joy? If it's there for the, if he's giving it to us, how do we receive it? Well, let's go back to what John chapter 15 shows to us. Because he tells us that we must abide in him. That word abide is used, I didn't do all the counting, but several times just in these first 11 verses that we see. The word abide there means to remain. To remain in Jesus. You see, the cross itself was just a means for us to get to God. Jesus came to this world, lived a perfect life, died and bore the penalty that you and I deserved. He absorbed the wrath of God that hung over us. He rose from the dead and defeated death itself, Satan, and all evil, so that we could come to Him through baptism and believe that He is our Savior and Lord and treasure. So that we might find the forgiveness for Christ's sake. That we are counted as righteous in Him. And we are made to know and enjoy God forever. You see, the cross is the means to the end. But the joy of God is the end. That's what He wants for all of us. That's what the Godhead experiences throughout all eternity. And He says, this is what I want for you. So abide in me. 1 Peter 3 and verse 18 says, for Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that He might bring us to God. See, the more that we see of His glory, that idea of the weight of His worth, and all that He has done for us, that draws us closer in fellowship with Him. But notice what else He says in this passage. Because He tells us that to abide in Him is to do His commandments. Notice what He says there. Verse 9 again, if just as the Father has loved me, I also have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in His love. These things I have spoken to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made full. This is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. Now, I don't know about you, but immediately when I hear the word commandment, I'm starting to think of, oh great, I got a list of do's and don'ts. I got a list of things that I can do, but then I've got a whole list of things that God's preventing me from doing. He's taking my joy away because I have to do these commands. That's not it at all. You see, when we see what God has done for us, His commands aren't meant to box us in and keep us from enjoying life. John would write in 1 John, he says, His commandments are not burdensome. You see, instead they become the way that we experience His glory and His nature. Example, when Jesus was in the garden, He said, Father, not my will, but your will be done. Even in the midst of that, do you think that Jesus was forced to go to the cross? Do you think Jesus had to go to the cross? That God is just behind Him saying, we're going to go whether you like it or not? No. He's there saying, I want to go to the cross. I don't want to necessarily go through it, and if there's any other way around it, He's saying, I want to do that. I want to do your will. Why? Because he understood who that would bring glory to the Father. It would bring many sons to glory. That's what it's about. That's what he understood. So he says, I will obey your commandments. I will go and do this because I know what it will bring. And notice what that his commandment is to love others. This is my commandment, verse 12, that you love one another just as I have loved you. See, the joy capacity which we have brings us to love others the way that Christ loves us. How does he love us? He loves us sacrificially. God has made us so that our enjoyment of him overflows visible acts of sacrificial love to others. That when we deny self and willingly sacrifice for others in love, we display to others the worth of God in our lives. Now think about that for a moment. Think about what he is saying there. Because he's connected all of these things. He says, abide in me. Well, what does abide in me mean? Well, it means to keep my commandments. Well, what does it mean to keep my commandments? It means you love others as I have loved you. He says, I've given you this greatest capacity, this infinite capacity for joy, so that you can love as I love. Now, I still think, I don't know about you, but I still think that's sort of hard for me to grab hold of. Thankfully, we have an example of that very idea. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 and 2, Paul is writing, and he's wanting to move these Corinthians, to motivate them. And so he gives them a story about what has happened to some other Christians in Macedonia. And he says there in verse 1, we want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. What he is saying is, here are these saints in Macedonia, and they are poor. These people are dirt poor. But they heard about what was going on in Jerusalem, and they wanted to help. And so he says, they wanted to help monetarily. They wanted to give something to help the saints in Jerusalem. Paul's saying, I didn't expect much because they're dirt poor. But he says, because of the joy that's in them, it overflows to their liberality in giving for the saints. You see, the grace of God was revealed to them. The gospel, the good news. Here's what Christ has done for you. Then, because of that grace, the joy abounds. And that joy overflows in the wealth of generosity. But notice, that is in spite of all of the affliction and poverty that these saints are going through. They're not having a great time. Their life is not the best in the world. They're struggling. And yet they say, I have joy. And that joy makes me want to show my love. What is the meaning for us? We think about that gift of joy. What does it mean when we are overwhelmed with life and we are stressed beyond our imagination? What are we to do? Because all of us have felt like that at some point in our life. Jesus tells us, I want you to realize not just the joy that you have, but whose joy it is. I want you to realize you have my joy. We need to see the glory of God as we experience fellowship with Him. And we need to let that joy overflow in acts of loving others. Now somebody says, well, wait a minute. Hold on. What about me? Don't you see I'm down in the doldrums? Things are not going well in my life. And therein is the point. It's not about us. It's about Jesus Christ. And the more that we show love to others, sacrificial love, the love that says it's going to cost me something. I've got to give up something to help somebody else. That kind of love is what fuels the joy that we have, the unstoppable joy that says, I have my Creator. No matter what situation I am in. That's the joy that He gives to you and me. The question I ask to you this morning is, do you have that joy? You don't have to find it. You don't have to go and make it. He is offering it to you, and He offers it freely. He invites you to experience delight like you've never seen or experienced before. It goes beyond the pain and the suffering of this life. He's not offering you happiness. He's not offering for all of your circumstances to be just the way you want them. He's offering you something much greater. Something that will get you through these difficult times, that will get you through when people say all kinds of bad things about you, when people don't like you. This will get you through. My question to you is, do you have that this morning? Because that is what He is offering to you freely. If you will come to Him, baptized into Jesus Christ, be the child of God, you can have infinite joy. If we can help you this morning, won't you come? Let's together stand and sing.